You are listening to the Frillabros Tech Podcast, episode 257. Tim Cook still plays his Wii. Season 6, episode 257 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is pre-sunrise, Saturday, August the 27th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and covering my back so I can run a really long distance tomorrow is my brother James Furlough.
Yeah, it's a little early. It's currently, well, 6 a.m. on the dot at the moment.
Yeah, I can...
I normally wouldn't be that... You know, I'd be like, yeah, I'm up, no big deal. But I literally was up at like 5 o'clock yesterday, so I could drive up to Vancouver, worked all day, did a little shopping at IKEA, drove all the way back down, which usually wipes me out. But thankfully, I was in bed by 9:30, so it all worked out.
Yeah, I've been mentioning on the show for a while that I'm going to be running a marathon in my 30s, and that marathon is tomorrow.
Yes. And
so I've been...
So how far are you going?
Yeah, right. What's funny to me is I have to, I got to wake up early, really early for this. And so
yeah, what time does the race actually start?
24 hours and 23 hours and 59 minutes.
That's not too bad, actually, a 6 a.m. start.
Yeah, it's really not. But you still got to get up like an hour to an hour and a half beforehand. Stupid.
Yeah.
So we're looking at 4:45, and I don't know why, but I decided, you know what? I want to be geared up and ready for this. I want it to feel normal waking up that early. So for the last week, I've been waking up at 4:45 every morning and just
wow.
Which you know what I you know I can tell that I'm getting older because
yeah, I don't tell.
I don't hate it. Like
ooh.
Yeah, it's like I get up and I'm like, "Oh, it's kind of nice to just be able to chill out in the morning, have a cup of coffee, read some articles, do some work before I go to work." I was like, "Oh, no, that wait a second. That's supposed to be so much worse than staying up late and drinking beer. Like, what the heck?"
that's the idea behind the miracle morning. Is there's a lot of value in not being rushed. I'm saying, yeah. Like, don't let meetings define when you get up, which a lot of people do. It's like, oh, I got to start to work, you know? And so it's like, it's interesting. He talks about the psychology of even just the snooze button and this idea of you're sleeping as long as you can until you have to go do something that for most people, they don't want to go do.
Yeah.
It's like, so you set up this negative mindset towards waking up where you hate doing it. And then he's like, and then you hit the snooze button, which, A, you have to go through that experience multiple times.
Yeah.
But then he's like, but then B, you are already right out the gate that morning setting yourself up to delay and to procrastinate.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, as opposed to, like you've been doing, getting up early and doing, oh, I get to do what I want. I get to do these fun things. I'm the one in charge deciding to do this. And it's like, it's just a totally different start to your day. And it has repercussions throughout the rest of your life.
It reminds me, the feeling reminds me of, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the day, we grew up in a house with a single bathroom and 5 people.
Yes.
And there, as
for the first time in my life, I doubled that.
What? Pretty awesome.
It took me a few years.
Yeah, I still haven't. I guess in college it was, but it doesn't matter. So the
College doesn't count as well. Exactly. You're taking in your the ratio is still probably worse, right?
No, so the best period of my life was when I lived in the single room, the president's room. I had my own bathroom. And I would walk outside and there was like a facility bathroom with like multiple restrooms. So it was like,
dang,
I could,
that's cush.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Because if my girlfriend was over, I could, and she'd be like, I gotta use the bathroom, and I have to use the bathroom too. There was one right outside.
Did you send her outside then? Is that...
it depends. Oh, no, I... Or did the chivalrous thing. But no, my point was that... So our dad had a shower time, our mom had a shower time that they had worked out over the years of their relationship. Then you got to showering age and you started showering regularly. Well, when it finally got time, I was old enough where I didn't want to smell bad all day long, and I started showering every day, I had to fit into the schedule that was already set, right. Which meant doing it super early. So I had to wake up before everybody else to take a shower, which is rough. Real rough. But the consequence of that was I was always super done before, long before we had to leave. So I started playing Command and Conquer in the morning before school and have to rush through levels. Mom was like, it's time to go, we gotta go. I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna save the game. and it was a progress. I used to play video games all the time in the morning before school. And
now you're reading the newspaper, drinking coffee. Not newspaper, but articles,
tech blogs, drinking coffee. It's the adult
equivalent. Trade-off there.
Honestly, though, it's the adult
equivalent. You're wasting your mornings, it sounds like.
But you know what I'm? You know what's really funny? The funniest part about it is what I'm reading about is like VR video games.
There you go.
Reading about video games. I'm not actually playing them.
You're already living a vicarious life and you don't even have kids yet. That's weird.
Right? I remember the day that I realized, I don't remember what day it was, but I remember the feeling on the day that I realized that I like reading about video games a lot more than I actually like playing video games.
Ooh.
And I have to convince myself to sit down and play video games because I know I will enjoy it. Whereas reading about them, I'm constantly looking for things to read. It's weird. It's a weird compulsion, James. But you know what? That's not what we're here to talk about. Actually, that's exactly what we're here to talk about. It's specifically my main article is about video games and reading about them. But so this week, every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I founded and work for HPI, but do not represent Hewlett-Packard Inc., their lack of growth, or any of their opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Thanks. I knew there would come.
Oh, go ahead.
And say, I knew there would come a day when I would stop laughing at the fact that you helped found HPI. I think that happened 2 months ago, and I just didn't notice it.
I know,
but it definitely it's come. It's just part of exactly.
We've been at it for almost a year now. I guess it'll be a year in November 1st. Will be the official year mark.
How's your startup going?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. So the CEO is a total rah 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 type of guy. There is nothing bad ever. So he was like, I don't get it. We reported the earnings this week because we're off from everybody else, and we were down a lot. And I think it was it depends on how you read it and what you read. It's around 14% down year over year. And which, no matter, yeah, exactly. No matter how you slice it, that's not a small number. Happens to be the biggest one so far. But anyways, but he was like, but we make great progress in other areas. It's amazing. And so he, I wrote this really optimistic email and was talking about all the great things that we've done and accomplished. And then I happened to, be reading tech articles, and some of them still cover HP. And so they were like, so HP's not doing great. And they're like, almost a year into the turnaround and still struggling to turn around.
Mm.
And there was another one that was talking about, it was a fun little pun. I wish I could remember it now. It was talking about how people have stopped printing, and like HP's struggling to fill up their ink tanks again or something. I wish I could remember. It was cute. It was like, I mean, in a very negative for us way. Yeah. But yeah. So, anyways, I don't represent that. It's not my fault. I just keep scoring.
That's pretty good. Pretty good way to do it. Keep future score even better. Yeah, that's there's a real problem when I remember what I wanted to say. I was watching Mr. Robot, and because I kind of powered through the first season right before the second season started, and I really liked it. I was excited about the second season, so I started. But I watched the first season on Amazon Prime, which is obviously commercial free. And then the current one isn't on Amazon Prime yet. But you can do it on demand to like Fox or whatever, which isn't commercial free, which is fine. Like I can, for a really good show, I hate it in principle, but I have enough patience to watch a couple of episodes with commercials, sort of, except it's not just the commercial breaks. Like they will, it'll be playing, and all of a sudden there'll be this really uncomfortable cut where, like, all of a sudden to go to commercial, and I'll just feel like, wow, that was a weird way to end that scene at that moment. And then it'll come back,
yes,
and the song will still be playing where the song was playing before the commercial break. They're cutting in extra commercial breaks and, like, breaking up the show. It's horrible. It's so disjointing because they'll have, like, this emotion, like, the writers are writing it to build up these emotional scenes, and they're just breaking it for a commercial break. So I was like, I'm done. That's fine. I want to realize that. But the reason I bring it up was because HPE, Hewlett-Packard
Enterprise,
they were like, they were teasing The Machine.
The Machine, which is not amazing or as amazing as they originally thought it would be.
Yeah, of course not. And, like, I remember we talked about it back in the day and when we were, like, first announcing it. And I kind of bought the hype. And then I was like, and then I talked to one of our family members who works for an HP competitor. And we talked about it. And he was just like, that's a terrible idea. That's not going to work. And I was like, but why? And he goes, you said they're building their own operating system for it, right? And I was like, yeah, because it's so revolutionary and like new. And he's like, yeah, that's not how it works. You build revolutionary technology, you make it work with the rest of everything else, or nobody will adopt it. Like, you don't get to just like come in and make something completely new that everybody will have to adopt to. Nobody grades. Yeah. Well, yeah. I know there's been one or two exceptions, but like it's just
the same company.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. That's not true. I'm thinking Apple and Google.
Yeah. Well, and even then, it's like Apple's biggest.
And they got lucky because there was really like BlackBerry was your
alternative. I know. Choice. Well, and even then, like, the real advantage for developers, like, okay, it was a completely different operating system, sort of. It was the Unix kernel using Objective-C. There was already a base of people who understood the fundamental technologies, so it was just creating kind of a new paradigm for how you program it. That's all they really were doing. And
what HP was going to do?
Well, no, that was the thing, is they were like, new operating system with new programming languages and new everything, because they wanted to, theoretically, they wanted to, you know, to maximize the efficiency of whatever this, for people who don't know what we're talking about, they basically were building a server that used a new chip architecture that would be like wicked fast, really, really powerful, have a lot of memory storage, and there were nobody really knew what they were building. There was some talk that it was going to use the memristor technology, which is the adjustable resistances, which will help you build different types of memory cells, high-speed memory cells, which Intel and Qualcomm are already doing. And, you know, it's just not – it's like everything that was exciting about it isn't exciting about it anymore, except it's like called The Machine. It took
2 years too long to get it out the door is what
happened. Yeah, which, you know, HP being HP. This is, we are so far off the rails here.
Let's quit bashing on my company.
Yeah, sorry about that. Disclosure. So if you want to follow us throughout the week, I'll probably post a picture of my... I'm not a big... I post pictures of when I run or about me running, because...
It doesn't look good, or...
Yeah, exactly. You know what it is? I have this, like, weird embarrassment about, like, doing it. I'm like, oh, I've got a fat... I'm fat and I'm running. Like, I don't know why I don't. But for this one, I'll make an exception. I probably will post about it. And so you can check that out at either at Matthew D. Furlow on Twitter or NextWiggin4 on the Instagram.
Yeah, you can do an Instagram story along the way.
Woo!
Your perfect finishing shot.
Yeah. I probably won't, after 26.1 miles, have the energy, whatever. By the way, we'll talk about it later. I was just going to strategizing phone calls, because I'm going to make phone calls so I can distract myself. You suck down my power.
Gotcha. Cool. Let's see. I'm jamesfurlow.com on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Nice. You can also check out everything we're going to talk about today, except for the HP bashing, on furloughbros.com. We'll link all the articles. Yeah, all the articles, videos, audio, everything like that. Go check it out. It's pretty cool.
Cool. All right. So, full disclosure here. The link to this article, I could pay $25 if you do it. So, that's my disclosure.
If I click on it?
Well,
or if
you sign up.
You were referred by James Furlow. Sign up today. That's for 25.
Me. Oh. Arcadia Power. Have you ever heard of them?
I have not.
So they're a clean energy company.
Nice.
And from what I can tell, it's totally free. So here's the idea, and I honestly have no idea how they make money. Other than it's like a semi-freemium type of deal where you sign up, and I've done it, and it's crazy easy to sign up for. They say it takes just 3 minutes. Well, it was a little more than that, but pretty close. But anyways, you sign up for it, and what they do is then you put in your information, but then you also put in the information for where you're getting your power from, like your bills information and username and stuff. Similar to like Mint, where you authorize business accounts, whatever. And then monitors your monthly electric usage, and it matches you with a green energy certified renewable energy source or certificate, really. And so because it's kind of this weird, the green energy thing, it kind of works like the pollution credits type of thing, where you can buy these certificates that are saying, oh yeah, I was being green, which then you can then use that certificate to pay for green energy. So is this okay? So let me see if I can explain this. So I may be getting power in my house using coal power,
right?
But these guys are able to say, oh no, James is doing it, and he wants, in my particular case, 50% of his energy to be green. So they buy enough of these certificates equivalent to 50% of my energy usage, and then use those certificates to go fund like a solar or wind power generator somewhere else in the world.
Right.
So I may not, you know, and so they're like, on average, it's green.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I signed up for the free account, which is using 50% wind energy. And it literally doesn't cost me anything.
Ooh.
Plus I get this cool dashboard, which genuinely looks nice. Plus, you can get discounts on other green-related products, which I'm not super interested in, but whatever. you can also, but then they also have a premium one where it's 100% wind energy, and they just charge you it's a 1.5 cents per kilowatt hour, essentially, which is how they make money and somehow probably pay for all the free people as well. And there's the only thing you do got to give up is, besides your own personal email, is your energy company login information.
So interesting.
Login for you. Oh, and they'll pay your bill for you if you want automatically, which I was like, I'm already on automatic bill pay. Doesn't matter.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you double doing it for me. That's something actually I'm going to have to watch next month to make sure that it doesn't get paid twice. But anyways, it's free. So
that's like, really cool.
Cool. Support the planet.
That's so. Yeah. Yeah. Did you know? So this is. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, if I was super smart, I would have probably moved my other article right now.
Okay. So let me get this straight. You're still paying your power company directly. You're not paying them to pay the power company?
Correct. Maybe. I don't know.
Because if you're paying them to pay the power company, then I know how this is working. You're paying them full price, and they're setting up they're doing the economies of scale when it comes to signing up for green energy things. And so it wouldn't make much difference for you from a savings perspective or any of your like your ability to get any of the discounts or taxes or whatever. And then so you get full power, but they get the advantage of having a whole bunch of people investing in green energy, and then they make money on the margins, is what I would guess.
Let's see here. Our proprietary billing system makes sure your utility bill gets paid on time each month. You receive statement alerts 72 hours prior to payment, and you can sit back and relax knowing your bill is taken care of. Best of all, we provide you with the option to pay via credit card, debit card, or checking account, which checking account's free. Credit and debit costs a little bit. Yeah, that's probably exactly how they're doing it. I'll have to see. I haven't received a bill yet.
It's cool. It's a cool idea, though. Hey, man, if it doesn't cost you anything to help the world, why not?
Boom. Yeah, you're probably right. That's a brilliant strategy on their part, then.
I like it.
Yeah, I think that's the future where we're headed, I think.
And, good.
Elon Musk kind of agrees with, I think this is actually a week old, but whatever. So his idea with SolarCity is to come up with the solar shingles.
Ooh.
So, which I am acutely aware of because I'm going to need a new roof in a couple of years.
Yeah.
On more than one building. And that was a humble brag. And just thought I'd call myself out on it since I've gotten into the habit of calling other people out recently. Yeah, but anyways, its idea is to not have to put solar panels on a roof, but to literally integrate them with the shingles themselves. And so there are some companies, what was it? Dow Powerhouse. Anyways, it's Dow is the name of the company. They had a project called Powerhouse, which sounds needlessly complicated. Solar shingles that were grid tied, which meant they had to be connected to an electrical grid. They were wireless and designed to be easily snapped together and installed by contractors in the roofing shingles, in the roofing industry. A single roof was estimated to cut an electric bill by 40 to 60%.
Wow.
Care to guess how much initial installation was?
What?
20 grand.
Woo!
Yeah. Normally, like an asphalt roof, depending on the size of your house, you're paying, like, it's a crazy deal if you get it for 4 grand. You're probably paying too much if you pay 8 grand. So it's somewhere in that range. So 20 grand was quite the premium to save 40 to 60% on a power bill that at its most is going to be $200 a month.
Right, yeah.
So they're like, yeah, the break-even point's a little far out there. So everyone's kind of, you know, half dubious that SolarCity's going to be able to do it. But they're also like, but Elon Musk kind of has a way.
Yeah, he's weird.
And their other point was, before I read this article, had you heard of Dow and their Powerhouse project?
No.
Before I read this, did you know that Elon Musk was buying SolarCity and doing solar stuff?
Yes.
And you are in the majority.
Right. That's normal.
Yeah. So So I'm kind of like, this whole solar and wind and clean energy thing is definitely starting to gain steam. It feels like we've somewhere in there, we crossed that tipping point to say like, all right, it's not like a great deal, but I feel good in my heart for it. So
right.
I'm going to do it now. And companies are figuring out ways to make it crazy simple. Like this Arcadia, like 3 minutes, we've got you up and running and you're good to go, which was, yeah, like I said, for the most part, true, which is nice. Right.
I like it. I like watching.
Yeah. So the tech there is just, I don't know, starting to take off. It's exciting.
It's only going
to
get more impressive, man. I truly believe that as time goes on. There's all sorts of little breakthroughs that you read about every week that don't really mean much on their own, but over time they add it to something real cool. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And as somebody like me, James, with my political background, I care a lot about things like this. Turns out you can go onto Facebook and they have an opinion about you.
Oh yeah,
based
that's right.
On what you how like, do you do this? Where you look and all sorts of stuff. So first you click on the link in the article. You go to the Facebook thinks I'm
Facebook.com /ads/ whoops,
preferences. Gosh.
Kicked me to their search bar. That's not what I wanted. Ads/preferences. I think I spelled that right. Your Facebook ad preference. Okay, I'm here.
And then you're gonna go under the interests. You've got like you got like six tabs. Go to lifestyle and culture.
Lifestyle is that a? Oh, it's mine's hidden. Lifestyle and culture is the last tab. Okay.
Ooh. And then under that, there'll be a bunch of little squares. One of them will say U.S. politics. And then it'll have
parentheses. Oh, yeah, U.S. politics.
And it'll tell you what you are.
Ooh, I'm a moderate.
You're a moderate?
I'm a moderate.
Man, how'd you get moderate? Mean? I wanted to be moderate.
I don't want to be lukewarm. Lukewarm's the worst.
I'm a liberal.
Woe to me. Yeah?
Okay. Yeah. Which I think is funny because... I was going to say, because I texted my girlfriend. I was like, my parents are always right. Their worst fears are coming true.
Just take a screenshot and send it to him.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Turns out, I didn't mean to do this, Mom and Dad. No, it's so funny because I try
I
so hard
how
to
accurate
be.
They normally are.
Well, yeah, right. Well, I try so hard to be apolitical on Facebook because I don't. Well,
yeah, me too.
You say, whether my friends are conservative or liberal, I don't want to know what they think because I want to still like them at the end of the day. And generally speaking, for whatever reason, I like never read things on... Okay, that's not entirely true. I have... The only time I ever like enjoy political posts is when all of my liberal and conservative friends all sort of team up and are like, yeah, this one libertarian idea kind of makes sense. I like it. I don't know. It's weird. So this is the deal. You can find out what Facebook thinks about your political allegiances are. Head over to where we just said. And then if you haven't directly indicated, so this is the tricky part, which is me. I didn't indicate because I don't want political stuff on Facebook. If you haven't directly indicated which political party you support by, for example, liking the page of a specific candidate, then Facebook will try to infer this information from your other activity on the site. The co-founder of Ad Targeting from TRGT Digital, he said this dude... told The Verge exactly how this process works isn't clear, but it's likely based on other interests that correlate with political alignment. If you like the NRA's Facebook page, for example, then statistically speaking, you're more likely to be a right-wing nut job than left.
Great insights. Thank you.
I know, right? Yeah. It's just like, I'm sure, because my problem is, I'm sure
it's not even... The trick is how they figure out... The interesting part there is, I guess... Yes, of course they're looking for correlations, and the NRA is a really obvious one. The interesting one is when they say, we've got these right wingers who tend to like knitting and are into baseball and also enjoy tech or something. You know, I don't know, whatever. Right. And they go, those people tend to be right wingers. That's where it gets really interesting. And they've probably got some crazy neural net that's just out there finding these correlations that you and I are like, wow, that's amazing. I mean, it was like perfect example. I remember when Barack Obama, I think it was him.
2012.
He was running first or second time, whatever.
2012,
running.
Second time.
And they, I know where they you're figured going. Out, yeah, yeah, they figured out like people who tended to give big donations liked George Clooney.
Yeah.
and so they're like, dude, let's run some George Clooney contests. People donate to get raffle tickets to have dinner or hang out with him, and people are like, ah! And it's like, that's a really cool insight, and that's probably
right
even more interesting than this article is making it sound.
Oh yeah. Well, and I remember, because I remember that was such a big deal about the dating mining operation that the Democrats haven't had going on as compared to the lack of one that the Romney campaign had going on. And one of the big takeaways was that, like, there are all sorts of weird predictors that would tell you what kind of a what kind of politics somebody had. And they said, and they were oftentimes more useful than the obvious ones. The obvious ones, like, do they listen to the NRA? Like, there's a certain percent, or do they listen to Rush Limbaugh? Is a weird one, because there's a certain percentage of the audience that listens to Rush Limbaugh to get mad at Rush Limbaugh because they disagree with him so passionately. Right. And those are the people that you want to target if you're a Democrat. And so they would say that, like, it wasn't always the obvious stuff that was the big tells. A lot of times it was the more subtle thing. Like, what sort of soda you like was a huge indicator. The correlation between whether you're a Pepsi guy or a Coke guy is, like, 80% with your political beliefs, which is insane. Yeah, it's such a weird idea. Like, how can that possibly have that strong of a correlation? They're like, we don't know, but it does.
That's, the style of the advertising.
Something
like that brand perception that they created subtly aligns with one of the two parties.
Exactly. Whether and sometimes you wonder if it was done intentionally, whether if it was done unintentionally,
because they want
or,
a whole pie.
Or exactly. It could just be a cultural, like, who are you accepted by thing, where like, do your friends drink Pepsi? So, like, and your friends also happen to share your political beliefs, and so you happen to drink the same soda that your friends drink. Like, it's a weird. There are really those sorts of correlations, like you said, are the really interesting ones. Whether or not you like the NRA, which I'm assuming that's why they put me as a liberal, is because it doesn't have to do with what even necessarily I've liked, but so much as my friends. Like, I tend to like them.
And have they liked the Green Party?
Exactly. And I tend to live in a very liberal area. And so,
that's also true. Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Most of my friends are pretty liberal. And, you know, it just, there's a.
How did I get labeled as a moderate? I'm kind of offended.
I know. I want to know how you did it so I can do it too. I want to be right lukewarm in the middle. I don't want Reddit or Reddit. Jeez, I don't want Facebook to know, because I don't want them to send me. I want them to think I've got no interest in politics. Just
there you go.
Do not share with
me. Yeah, that's my real, like, where's that option?
Yeah, right.
Appear to be interested.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not true.
I think we're gonna say. I think that's what a moderate is, James.
Yes, I win. Or am I going to be on the fence and targeted? That's even worse.
Yeah, don't want to be a low information voter, because then that's who gets pummeled.
That's interesting. That's one of those where it's like, we all knew they were tracking that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and now it's like, oh, they really are.
Yeah, it's worth going
to put it out there too.
Right? It's actually worth going to, because this link has a whole bunch of different preferences and what kind of person you are. You know, it's like business and industry. What sort of things do you like? I'm you know, you have a preference. I have a preference about equity towards finance, I guess.
Wait, where does it tell you that?
Under the business and industry. The sorts of technologies I'm into are electronics, consumer electronics, technology, computers, and Uber.
Oh, and Windows 2000. So what's your first one? Like, what's your first category?
News and entertainment.
How many do you have there?
I've got a dozen.
I have 59.
Whoa. Oh, wait, no, maybe I've got more. I've got 14, sorry.
Weird. Interesting. Yeah, no, I have 59, and then for business industry, I have 35.
Oh, my gosh.
What do I have for people? Who do I... What's my, Robert Kiyosaki, Rush Limbaugh, Peyton Manning, Toby Mack.
Under my interests...
Just Bill Murray. Cool.
Under my news and entertainment interests, one of my things that I'm into is...
Jared Allen is one of them.
It's awesome. One of my news and interest categories is Microsoft Minesweeper.
Yes.
That's pretty accurate.
I have a SimCity and right next to it, City Building Games.
Ooh.
And How It Should Have Ended, which is appropriate.
Yeah.
Apparently, awesome. The Block Australian TV series? Huh.
I accidentally clicked on that at one point.
Apparently. This is kind of interesting. Let's see, what sports am I into? The Colts, the 49ers. Ooh, interesting. Colts ahead of the 49ers? Maybe a few years back. Football's, oh gosh, you know, I've been saying football's dead for a while. Facebook does not think that at all for me.
That's really funny.
They're like, apparently I'm also into the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's news to me. Cool. Thanks for letting me know, Facebook.
Did I tell you that, I told you I don't think I can cheer for the Niners anymore?
Yeah.
But, you know, as much as I think football has peaked, I still think it's at the top, so I have to pretend like I still really like it. So I'm, I gotta pick a new team. And I mentioned to you the Oakland Raiders, who got quite a bit of pushback from both my girlfriend and your wife.
Wait, from my wife?
Yeah, I guess. That's what my girlfriend was saying. I thought.
Maybe you got pushback from me.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways.
You
changed your mind? Can we celebrate today?
I've got a different balloon that I'm floating up there.
Okay.
KC Chiefs.
What?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
Ah.
Oh. Go with my boy, future Hall of Famer Alex Smith. I've been calling that since he was playing for the Niners.
I can see that. I can see that.
They got pretty good looking hats, which is kind of where I'm at right now. Anyways,
you can make people upset by picking the Patriots.
I would
physically accosting you.
I'd physically accost myself.
Oh, that's funny. Interesting. All right. Cool. Facebook revealing truths about ourselves that we ourselves do not know. That's awesome. Interesting. Scary, but interesting. Doesn't make me want to quit Facebook.
Not at all.
Makes you say, like, how can I game this to, like, curate my persona?
Exactly.
Super
cool. That's all I care about.
Okay. I want to shift gears, though.
Okay.
Change your mindset. We're going to step solidly back into the tech space here.
I like it.
So, did you know that on August 24th, 2011, Timmy Cook took over Apple?
Timothy?
It's been 5 years.
That is a really long time. How long have we been doing this show for?
six, right? We're in season six.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Wow.
As you mentioned before every show.
That's like really...
I'm just reading. I don't actually hear what I say. a bunch of people decided to do some comparisons, which I'm going to run through just real quick because I ultimately want to ask a question. Okay?
Okay.
which should be interesting. All right. Profit and loss, P&L, when he took over, their four-quarter revenue was about $100 billion. What is it? I don't even know. What is this? Give me a... Okay, millions. So their quarterly revenue was That says to me $100 billion. Does that sound right to you? That can't.
Quarterly year earnings.
Trailing four quarter revenues. Yeah, it's quarterly. It says 100,000, but then okay. The title, it says it's comma million. Please tell me he just tells me the answer somewhere in here. $200 billion. Oh my gosh, that's a ridiculous amount of money. Okay,
let me see. Cool. Down. Crazy, actually.
They're huge. I guess I'm putting it next to how much we make. it's a big number. Anyways.
That's a lot of money. We're doing really good.
Yeah, maybe that is right. Anyways, in 2011, they were making $100 billion per quarter.
Okay.
And this last quarter, they're slightly north of $200 billion. So
it's like twice.
They've doubled. Of course, he's also now on the down, like it's been shrinking. Oh, so there's that.
It's all over. They're not making any money anymore.
Margins, for the most part, pretty flat. There was like an uptick shortly after he joined, and then it kind of dropped back down, and now it's flattened out at 40%. No, wait, that's gross margin. Net margin is hovering a little bit above 20%. Not bad. Been the same.
What's the difference between a gross margin and a net margin? It's probably unimportant. I just thought
I think the margin is your margin per product. So they make like 40% per product, but then you have a bunch of other operating costs that are related to it, like running your stores, R&D, paying your employees, I think. I don't know, dude. I only took a business class.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is... Well, one of my interests in equity is finance, so I'm trying to sort this out.
Fair enough. R&D spend, this is interesting, because it's been pretty big. When Jobs left, Apple was spending about 2%. Of their revenue on R&D. Now they've doubled it to 4% on R&D. So they went from $2.5 billion to $10 billion, which is that's pretty big. And that's going to factor into my question. Cash hoard is ridiculous. They went from $50 million to they're sitting well north of $200 million right now. That's ridiculous. Unit shipments, iPhone's taken off like a rocket. However, Mac has been pretty flat, and iPad is now declining, as we know. And I think that's the only interesting one. Service revenues are like, that's just been a sweet, steady increase for them. When he took over, they were under $10 billion. Now they're at like $23 billion for that. And that doesn't look like it's slowing down at all. So the kind of the highlight here is Apple's bigger than ever.
Yeah.
They have probably peaked just from a revenue standpoint, but still super huge. He's literally the company's twice as big as when Jobs left. So here's the question. Ready for it?
Yeah.
Would Steve Jobs be okay with today's Apple?
No.
No.
I think so. Okay, this is going to come off a little bit harsh. I really like Tim Cook. I think he seems like a really genuine and cool guy. And he seems to be doing a pretty good job with Apple, obviously. So this is the criticism of a kid doing a podcast in his bedroom. As I say this.
World criticism?
Yes, this is. But I pay attention to this a lot, and I try to go by... I try to use a lot of data and then kind of get like a gut feeling about what does this remind me of? You know what this reminds me of? a company spending a tremendous, I mean, just a tremendous amount of money on R&D with very, very little new products that get people excited to justify that R&D spend and just kind of the same steady growth in the same categories that have always been there. Uh-huh. It's very Ballmer-esque. Like, it reminds me of exactly of Steam Baller. I know. I didn't. I'm not trying to be that mean, but that's what it reminds me of.
I'd like to see it.
Huh. It's just, it's got that, like, Steve Ballmer, by all accounts, is a very...
So what do you think that problem is? Is it the lack of the vision? Is it you just start to get big? And, like, so for example, in the printing industry, as you sell more printers, you have to sell more printers just to replace the existing ones. You know, just to keep the business going, it's not good enough to sell the same number of shipments. You have to accelerate, or how do I want to say it? It's not good enough just to grow at the same rate every year, because of the way printer stuff works, you actually start shrinking. You actually have to accelerate your shipments in order for it to just maintain. Right. And I wonder if the same thing is true for a company like Apple when it comes to, like, just maintaining all these products and keeping them moving forward and just squashing bugs and whatever. Like, that takes a tremendous amount of resources. And so if you want to add new products to it, it's like, no, we're not just, it's not just one person. It's like three people.
Right.
Because you still got to have that one person over here doing their thing.
So this is what's unfair. And I, you know,
I just don't know. I don't know.
What I was going to say is it's one part of it is management. One part of it is just public relations slash advertising, branding. One part of it is actual technology that you're developing. And one of the, like, and, you know, I go to the Steve Ballmer example of, like, Microsoft was doing really innovative things the entire time Steve Ballmer was in charge. Like, even the products that they were delivering, they were doing really innovative things. But they were really bad at, like, making that exciting. There always felt like there should be more going on, and everything just kind of felt like it was stay the course, very, very steady as you go. Even when that wasn't the case, they made it seem like it was somehow. You're like, what is going on? How do you make really cool stuff seem so boring? And then their really, really cool and exciting stuff, they just would never release. For reasons that, like, that only Steve Ballmer,
no one else will know about.
What did you say?
Oh, I said good catch.
Oh, thank you.
You almost dropped your cup.
Yeah, I know. You know, which Steve Ballmer, and I think the problem Satya Nadella, part of the reason why he's so exciting is because Steve, like, as soon as he left, they started releasing new technologies and, like, new apps and new, you know, stuff for the iPad and doing this and doing that. And everybody pointed out that, like, these are products that take years to develop. Like, these were all under development under Steve Ballmer. Like, you can't...
Sasha doesn't get credit for it, for the development initially.
But the difference is that it seems as though the development teams would build these things, and then at the last minute, Steve Ballmer would go, nah, that doesn't fit in with whatever kind of image we're trying to build, so we're not going to ship that. Or we're going to ship it, but make it sound really boring. Where Satya was like, no, make it as exciting as possible, and then ship that.
Like, you know what would make this look cool? Is if you added this. And I mean, that was like Jobs' bread and butter. To go, this is a neat technology, I like it, let's make it look awesome. He'd add that little dollop on top that would make it special.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Steal your thunder.
No, I'm glad I'm not the only one who sees it. It's this idea that's why I say it's one part advertising. And that was so much of Jobs' brilliance, was understanding that the technology was really cool, and how to make it seem really cool to everybody else too. Like, he was really good at sales. I'd say that was his thing. And I get the feeling that Tim Cook, I don't know, there's a story that we can talk about a little bit. I'll talk about it now. I'll bring it up now. So Apple switched. So Apple introduced Siri back when Steve was in charge of it, right?
Yeah.
And it was this thing that you could talk to and it would do stuff. And it's pretty cool, worked pretty well. Everybody kind of liked it. But it had limitations. It didn't work as well as everybody wanted it to once they really tried it out. And over the last couple of months and years, it's gotten better, dramatically better. And especially on the watch, it's really impressive. And one of the reasons why that happened is Apple has announced this week, like, yeah, we switched the whole thing over to a neural network, like natural language processor a couple years back and just didn't tell anybody. Like, what? And they're like, yeah, that's why it's so good now. It's because it's doing all sorts of machine learning and we're using the latest technology. Like, we're really into this whole machine learning thing and artificial intelligence. Like, we're really doing this hardcore. We're just not telling anybody we're doing it. And they're like, why aren't you telling anybody? Why? This is like the biggest, everybody loves this stuff. Like, they eat it up. They want to know. They don't care if it works or not. They just want to know it has machine learning in it. Why are you hiding this fact? This is craziness. And that's the sort of thing that Steve Jobs knew how to handle, where he would just walk up and say, like, a lot of companies have been doing language processing without neural networks. And it's horrible. You all know it's horrible. You know that those companies that do that were the worst. And you'd be like, wait a second, that's literally you guys. And you'd be like, but we're not like that. We've done better. And you're like, oh yeah, that's right, Apple's better. Like, and he just had a way of pitching these technologies that made the very thing you just paid a bunch of money for to them seem really lame. And the thing that they're about to give you, which is something that other companies are already doing, seem like the future. And it drove sales and it drove technology. And then every once in a while, Apple actually would come in with something that wasn't just the best version of it, wasn't just brand new, something nobody else was doing. Every once in a while, they'd come up with something that was brand new that nobody else was doing and was better than what anybody else would do. And that was like that magic point where Steve knew what that, like, that magic was. And it feels like there's nobody that at Apple that can do that. And so they're all being really, really, really safe. Let's not go out. Let's not tell people what we're doing. Let's not get excited about this. Let's not come up. And the other thing is that Steve Jobs would have never called it machine learning. He would have never called it artificial intelligence. He would have called it something really cool. I can't come up with anything off the top of my head, but like,
him and Phil Schiller. Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Be like, we've given Siri a brain.
Yeah, exactly.
And they have some sort of Wizard of Oz tie-in, and it would be hilarious.
Dude, that's exactly what we're talking about. Like,
they'd have like Pink Floyd's whatever their song playing, which is maybe dark for what they're looking for, but it would work.
But it would be something like inspirational and sound really cool. And if anybody looked at it from a technology perspective, you'd be like, "Yeah, it's just a neural network with a couple other doodads that they're doing, and it's pretty cool." But Apple it'd be like the Retina display. Apple today would call that just an HD screen. Steve Jobs called it the Retina display. Like, what does that even mean? It doesn't mean anything, but it conveys an emotion. Well, it has to do with my eyes. I know that because my eyes have retinas. And that was his point, is the technology isn't about the screen. It's about how your eyes see the screen. At a certain distance, you can't tell the difference between the pixels. It's all about your eyes. And once we get to that layer, and Steve was just so good at that sort of a thing. And so I think he'd look at the company today and he'd kind of sit back and go, they're very much suffering from the innovator's dilemma, which is he was a big, big proselytizer about that idea of companies, they innovate something, they disrupt everybody else, they become the dominant force, and then there becomes an incredible momentum to preserve your dominance. Right. And it allows other innovators to come in behind you and out-innovate you and then disrupt you and defeat you. And I think that's what we're seeing at Apple right now, is there's just... They're suffering the innovator's dilemma big time. And now Apple does have a weird way of not talking about what they're doing. it's possible that they've got something in the works that they're spending tons of R&D on that will be really that radical. I don't buy it necessarily. I don't have any reason.
I feel like the watch was an example of that.
Yeah.
And we saw it.
Yeah.
That was something that they were all like, super excited.
Let me just say, and I think it is exciting. Yeah, right? I think it is exciting. I think it is really cool. I really like the watch. I'm excited to come out with another one. I probably will keep this one for a full cycle until they get to the cellular, a full another cycle until they get to the cellular stuff. I say that now, but wait till they actually announce it. But most importantly, it's their most successful new technology they've ever developed. It's crushing everybody else in the market. Like, it's a really successful product. It's really innovative. It's really cool. And yet somehow everybody thinks it's really lame. Like, how did they message so poorly? Like, how is it that the iPhone was just like the most exciting thing that had ever been? People were like, do you have an iPhone? Like, do you even know what that means? But with the Apple Watch, I don't know. People just, the feeling's different. And I don't know. I just, it's a different company with different leadership, and you know, they're missing the magic of Steve Jobs. Oh my gosh. But I think more importantly, there's a lot of companies that can do with, there's a lot of really successful companies that could use the magic of Steve Jobs, but they still have boldness to try new stuff. And whether it's Tesla or Google or Amazon, or even Microsoft right now, or Facebook, you know, the other big competitors. Whereas I don't get that sense of boldness from Apple. And we talk about Apple less and less and less because they just don't. It's not because they're not a really important company. It's not because their technology is not really cool. They just don't come with the boldness that everybody else comes with. And stocking everything up.
That, and they save everything for like 2 months out of the year. And I don't know. It's weird. They're playing like they've won. You know?
Yep.
And that's what you do with a company. Like, we'll do two big things throughout the year. It'll be good. That's when we'll release stuff. It's fine. Mm.
It just seems to me that it's the classic innovator's dilemma. And
yeah,
Apple's peaked, and they'll do what every big company does, which is they'll peak, they'll struggle, they'll basically maintain. But if you actually look at it over the really long time, other companies will surpass them and do better. And then eventually they'll get a new CEO who'll be like, why haven't we launched all this really cool stuff we've been building? And somebody with a little more boldness to fail will jump in. I think maybe that's the best way to say it is, I don't know, Musk has a boldness to fail. Like,
true.
Just put it out there. SolarCity might be a disaster, but he has this desperate desire to save humanity, even if it embarrasses him, his failures along the way. And Google, they're fine with putting it out there that, hey, we're building a self-driving car, and if we fail, fine. Let everybody know. Just hang our shame out there. And Apple, we talked about it last week, how they're like, we don't want to identify that there's a problem. We only want to talk about it once we fixed it. Like, I get that, and there's something interesting in that idea, but it also makes you seem really lame, because it makes you feel like you're not even willing to take on big problems. Like, don't be afraid to publicly fail. That's okay. It's good. We like that. And it improves your successes. It doesn't make them seem less. I don't know. Unless you're like Mike, except for the Steve Ballmer-esque, like, it felt like they were always failing. Felt like they were always trying to do cool things and then never succeed, which was, I don't know. Get the middle point. Do something better. Oh, whatever. So, speaking of companies that don't seem to be doing well.
Yeah.
So, Nintendo launched a game system a couple years back called the Wii. And it was a huge success. Just screaming success. Outsold everybody else by leaps and bounds. And then one day, sales just stalled. Out of the blue. There's remarkably
a certain game that's out right now that they shouldn't get credit for.
Yeah. Wait, what? Oh, yeah, Pokemon, gotcha. There's generally pretty predictable sales arcs for video game systems. There's, you know, the early adopters, the mid-range adopters, the long-term adopters, the late adopters, and they've got all these, like, different models to predict, like, okay, if we sell this many systems in the first month, how many systems do we think will sell over the lifespan? Well, the Wii didn't really fit that. For whatever reason, it was hugely successful, and then towards the end, sales just collapsed, and the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 both surpassed Wii eventually. Then, trying to reinvigorate the market, Nintendo came out with the Wii U, and the Wii U never took off, never had any real success, and then... So now they've been struggling, frankly, and they're kind of gearing up for the next system, literally called NX, and that'll be coming out. They haven't announced a launch date or anything at this point. They've just said, yeah, this is what we're working on. But this week, I believe it was their president, they're North American sales, I believe is the dude. They were talking about learning their lesson from the Wii U. What went wrong, and how do we do better? And their solution to it is they think what caused the success with the Wii was the Wii Sports. If you don't remember, for the rest of our audience. Every Wii came with a demo game, basically. It was a bunch of little sports games that all use the Wii motion controller and different ways to use it and sort of different interactions. But everybody came with a game that really demoed the technology super well and was pretty enjoyable.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah, and... really set the stage for what the Wii was going to be for its entire life cycle. And they are sitting there saying the Wii U had a pretty innovative new controller in that it actually is like, it looks like a mobile gaming console where it's got a big old LCD screen in it.
Yeah.
That can mirror what's being shown on your TV screen in real time wirelessly, which is really impressive. Like, that's actually a really impressive piece of technology, but nobody cared. Nobody liked it. And so they analyzed that the problem was they didn't really have any good software that showed off what it would be good for, either as a second screen experience or as a
that's fair.
Because one of the selling points of this whole thing was going to be that you could sit on your couch. And the family could be watching TV, and you could turn on your Wii U controller and use that little screen as your TV screen for the game.
Like the PlayStation Vita. Yeah,
totally. Right. Which is pretty cool. And I did a lot of reading at one point about how they do their image stuff. The lack of lag that they're getting over Wi-Fi is really astounding. Like, they have a proprietary Wi-Fi protocol that they're using. It's really cool. And yet nobody cares. And
content's king, like we've talked about.
So this is going to be my question. Are they right? Is what went wrong with the Wii
no.
U? Yeah, I don't think so either.
That sounds like a salesperson's explanation. you're just like, it was too similar to the previous one.
Yep.
And it felt like with the original Wii U had the nunchucks, and it didn't feel like a gimmick. It genuinely felt like a new way to play. And the graphics weren't fantastic, but the way you could play with it was super fun. Yeah, Wii Sports, it was demo that turned out to be the funnest game they created,
which I think is the entirety of the problem.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I mean, I Mario Kart was fun too. But it was like when someone came over and wanted to check it out, like I didn't throw Mario Kart into the console. I played Wii Sports, and every single person, you're like, now let's play Wii Sports. And you'd play that for an hour and then you'd be done.
Yeah.
And then it was only someone like myself where I had bought the console and I had bought other games. It was like, all right, now I'm going to go play a football game or something that doesn't necessarily need the nunchucks.
Right.
And that was what was compelling about it. And, you know, when the Wii U came out, it was kind of like, oh, there's this handheld thing. Okay, the graphics look similar. And we've always known that if you're going for graphics, you don't buy a Nintendo game. Mm-hmm. I did hear that, what was it, the Super Mario Bros. Game was genuinely fun once it came out. And so maybe that was part of an issue. Because they say it was a launch game, but I feel like it was not quite at the launch. But maybe I'm misremembering, which is fine. I don't know. But even then, like the Super Mario Bros., it was like, oh, it's old school Super Mario, but four of you can play now. And part of it's like, okay, so it's the same old game, just with more people? How is it different, better? Again, I hear it was genuinely fun, and so maybe. But you think about first blush, you know, and that's, you got to get someone like me to go, ooh, I'm interested in that. And they struggled to hit that. It was too similar to, like I said, the PlayStation Vita. And I feel like with the Wii, they didn't have that strong enough back catalog to carry it forward. And right. I don't know. I think people... I'm trying to think, what could they have done that would have made people say, yeah, totally worth the upgrade? I mean, because even today, I'm like, man, just keep my Wii. I wouldn't play my Wii U. I mean, it doesn't really matter because I don't have television, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. In this hypothetical world.
Yes.
I have a TV,
and life is great.
As weird, as simple as it sounds, as much as it feels like an excuse, I think you nailed it. The very first glib comment you made, content is king. They didn't have content, period.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same titles that they've had since the 64. It's Mario Kart, Zelda, Mario, there's another one, Super Smash Bros, Star Fox. Like, you know what the problem with all of those are? They're all Nintendo games. List me one game that everybody gets excited about that is not a Nintendo game. You know? Where's your yeah. Metal Gear Solid? Where's your Halo? Where's your you know,
just even like sports games? Where's your Madden?
Right, and that's NCAA, and a lot of,
which I don't even think NCAA makes a game for Wii.
I don't think so. You know, and you've got all sorts of these like AAA titles, Grand Theft Auto, Fallout 4.
Yeah,
you know, games that every other platform can play, but the Nintendo can't. So now it's a mutually exclusive thing. If I want to play that game, I have to own both consoles. No, just build a console that can play both, that play all those other games too. Like, that's the thing that I think that, and Nintendo has always said, no, we're going to build a low power system and focus on specific types of content. Like with the Wii, it was, we're the only ones with the motion controller, so we'll build a low power system, low graphics handling, but we'll focus on games that require motion controlling. And those were fun. Like they did a good job with that, but a lot of people had to make the decision between a Wii and an Xbox 360. And early on, everybody picked a Wii, and then eventually they picked the. They went back and got the Xbox 360. Their idea was
they've opened up a whole new market of people who never bought games are now buying the Wii. That was what they did, but those people bought it, and they're not going to go and buy another console that looks similar, except now it's got this extra thing that makes it more expensive. Like, that's
right.
If you're truly going after that market, that's not how you go after that market.
In the quote-unquote, exactly, I agree. In the quote-unquote hardcore gamers, the guys that did go out and buy both consoles decided that it was a mistake to buy just the Wii because it didn't have all the gaming options that they wanted. Whereas the other platforms,
it didn't have the online piece. Yeah, I mean, it was right. A lot.
Whereas, Whereas PlayStation and Xbox, they did what a good competitor would do. They came up with their own version of motion controllers. They added more features beyond it. They replicated all the games. So if you wanted those things, those were options on their systems too. And they're just, I mean, they were throwaways. They didn't really care about them that much. Microsoft tried to make the Kinect like a really big deal, but people didn't want it. That was the problem. People didn't want it. And then Nintendo undercuts themselves even more, because for me, the biggest reason why I like playing on the Wii and stuff, the games that I liked the most were old Nintendo games that you could get emulators for on it, whether it was, you know, Sonic or, which is technically a Sega game, but, or Mega Man or stuff like that, like the old school games, which you can buy all of those on your even cheaper 3DS. And from a cost perspective, it just never made sense. Like, people want something that spreads the gamut. I think Nintendo, if they really wanted to succeed, they got to make a platform that can handle AAA games. Make something that is competitive and add your own unique gimmick to it. But
I think it's too late.
I agree.
I don't think they've been investing in that technology. They don't even have that mindset. Because the CEO could come out and say, we're going to make a platform that could work for AAA games. And unless he made that statement 3 years ago internally, and that's the idea, like, no, that's not what they're going for. They like the idea that they own the hardware and the software, and that they make the best games for their system. Like, to them, that's bragging rights. And I don't know. I'm shocked that they're still in the hardware game, to be honest.
For the
TV consoles, I guess. There's a part of me that's like, man, they really should look into developing some of these games for the other systems, but I don't know. That's just not part of their culture. I think we're just going to continue to see a nice slow drag. We could be completely wrong with the NX, but I doubt it.
I doubt it.
I mean, it's especially nice to change up the name, unless they don't, unless they're like the Wii W.
Right.
Which they could do. I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, that's what they did with the Wii U. They called it like the Dolphin or something, and they changed it to the Wii U, and everybody was like, really, really, the Wii U? Like, you're not even going to differentiate it enough to make it feel like it's a completely different system? Great. That was a terrible marketing decision.
So it was a failure on the marketing, on the branding, on the games, on the core technology.
Yeah.
It's just like, it really wasn't just one leg that failed. And for them to say, we didn't message it well enough, you're like, sorry, man, it really wasn't that cool. Message it all you want.
Let's say, you could shine it up pretty good and maybe you would have improved sales.
It wasn't their messaging that took Wii U, or that took the original Wii through the roof.
Right.
It wasn't them. It was, they did a great job of creating a demo disc that happened to be with every single game that people were like, you got to try this.
Yeah.
And it sold itself.
Exactly. I was going to say something else.
Which, by the way, that kind of tying it back in, Apple with their iPhone, it sold itself in a similar fashion with the touch screen where you could show people the... Yeah, I remember, like, I would just show people the cowbell app. It's like, check it out. You tap the screen and it rings the cowbell. It's super goofy and funny.
Well,
and you could do tiny little demos like that. You'd be like, check it out. This is a web page. And you could hand your phone over to somebody. I think that's one thing that, like, to hand your watch over to someone to play with is a little bit more difficult. And it's not as overtly obvious on your phone.
Well, the thing that I was... Where Apple killed it on the touchscreen, and where I think it's really unfair to say Apple didn't innovate the touchscreen at all, because a lot of people say that... Well, I know, but I know that there's a back in the day when it came out, and they're like, we invented the multi-touch screen, and everybody was like, it's the first multi-touch screen, it's so amazing, Apple did something completely new, and a lot of technologists were like, we've known about multi-touch and like multi-touch gestures since like the 80s, like this isn't anything new, Apple's just taking old technology, polishing it up and put it on their phone.
Whatever.
I know, but...
Just knowing about it doesn't count, dog. Got to
right, yeah. Putting it into the
package. I've known about flying cars for a while, but you know what? First person who comes out with it, I'm gonna be like, "That's innovative, awesome." Okay,
right?
Come on.
The thing that I actually think Apple did, and this is something that they attribute directly to Steve Jobs, is recognizing he didn't design it, but that he's always gone back to, and I completely agree with this, that the moment he knew what the iPhone was when in a demo situation, because if you remember correctly, they were building the iPad first.
Right.
And they were trying out all different types of technologies, different gestures and stuff. And so they had this really big blocky thing. It was this huge, like, basically computer terminal where the screen was the size of an iPad. And they showed him... the rubber band effect and the inertial scrolling, and that was the moment he said, wait, we need to stop everything, this is a phone. And that motion, that motion, the ability to flick the screen and have it move and slow down naturally and feel more like an interface than any other interface anybody's used before, was like that it's you picked up the iPhone the first time you used the iPhone, it made sense. 5-year-olds got it.
Yeah.
Which is something that you can't say about the Wii U. It's not something you could say about the Apple Watch. It's not something
it would be interesting.
It's crazy.
Super interesting to talk to some of the executives at Nintendo. And just figure out how many of them game. Like, regularly, how often do you turn on a console and play? And are you just playing on Nintendo, or are you also picking up a Sony and an Xbox and trying it out? And I just... because you get that sense that they don't anymore. I mean, like, Miyamoto, yeah, he's a gamer. I get it. And I think who was the one? Was it Reggie? Right? Was the CEO who passed away?
I don't remember his name.
I think he was also a gamer. I genuinely believe that. But he was also he was sick around the Wii U time,
right?
And then obviously in the middle of it passed away. I don't know if the current CEO plays.
He doesn't seem like.
Yeah, and I think part of that is so, just so critical. Whereas, I don't know about Tim Cook. I know he uses his devices, and he's got I've got my iPhone and my watch right here. And I know, clearly he cares about his health and he works out a ton from what I understand. And so, shocker, Apple's focusing on the health stuff right now.
Right.
Which, again, I'm like, hey, you know what? It's being consistent. It's not the most amazing thing in the world. It's important.
You know what's so
funny? Which is good, but...
I was saying, Apple's trying to get us to eat our medicine, take our medicine, which you're like...
Yeah.
I think they're doing as good a job as any company, if not better than any other company, in making wide-scale health seem exciting and important. That might just be me at the point in my life, though. That just might be me going, like, I was really, really super unhealthy. I got quite a bit healthier. I'm looking around at my friends who... So I'm at this, like, the signs of aging are starting to show up in a lot of my friends.
You're so just, old, you 30-year-old.
I know. But, like, my friends are going bald. They're getting gray hairs. Some of them are starting to suffer the long-term health effects of... bad decisions that they've made perpetually through their life, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or weight, whatever. Like I feel like I'm really in tune to it because I was so overweight and I got healthy. Like
Yeah.
I'm really in tune to the different signs of what that looks like. And so it might just be me that the Apple Watch works for me for health, and it's exciting because it's something I care about. And it's hard for me to put myself in somebody else's mindset.
It's funny.
And say, that exciting. Do people care?
I was talking with a guy. He has an Apple Watch, but his review of it is very different than yours. He's like, "Meh, it's okay. I could probably just get a Pebble next time. It really just does notifications, and even then, it doesn't do them good enough for me because I still can't reply it effortlessly." I know. Oh, I know. And but to add to it, not healthy at all.
Yeah.
So the whole stand-up thing is probably just annoying to him. I would not be surprised if he's turned that off.
I'm sure. Yeah, I hate to be. Yeah. Whereas I never get the notification. When I go on long drives, yeah. I remember, oh yeah, that's right, my stand-up notification's still on. But I stand up enough for it. Every once in a while during the show, I get the notification. It's right, this is right. The longest I ever sit for, you know, during my week regularly.
So though. I just, you know, which I think adds a little bit to what you're saying. I mean, we're still very much a sample of two, but yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. You know, with Satya Nadella thinking about him for Microsoft, I get it. His cloud services, everything else, yeah, give away for free. We'll make money on the cloud. That's his mindset. And he's kind of hip. When you look at the way he dresses, you're like, dude, he's kind of figured out. Yeah, and so, like, you know, Satya. Surprise, surprise, the apps kind of look hip. And
I wouldn't
want to literally uninstall their keyboard, but...
yeah, me.
Switch. I kept the Google.
Me too. Well, I'm back to the Apple keyboard. You know what it is?
You know what? The Apple keyboard is better, but the GIF search on Google's thing is significantly better.
The one thing, if Microsoft had had this, I'd still be using the Microsoft keyboard. Is the speakerphone? Like I regularly
miss that.
And it's. You know, because it's the, I can't remember how to spell this word. or more importantly, if I swiped something and it came up wrong and I could hit delete and then the speaker and say the word and then go back to swiping, it would have been fine. Like, it's just like, but I can't, and I use the phone. It was the only thing I missed all the time. And the keyboard just wasn't quite good enough to justify not having that feature. So, I'm back to Apple, but
fair enough.
We have talked
forever.
Yeah,
right. 40 minutes. We got this.
All right, cool. yeah. So I have a question, James.
Yeah.
What's your favorite application of all time?
My favorite application of all time.
Yeah, there we go.
Jeez, let me think about this. Favorite application, like, are we talking on my phone, on my computer? Because, like, SimCity is pretty high up there.
Okay.
but I don't think you're talking about games, right? You're thinking.
We say, but how would you keep track of the data when you're playing SimCity?
It's in my head. I don't know what you're talking about. Got it all memorized. Scarily enough, that was probably true at one time. I'm trying to think. I mean, if you just go by, probably usage stats,
okay.
It's probably a tie between, like, Notepad, and what do they call it on Apple's thing? Text Edit and Excel. It's probably a two-way tie between those two. Like, I have Text Edit open right now. I think, like, I almost have it, like, an automatic, just open it when the computer turns on.
That's interesting. You use Text Edit, not Notes.
Oh yeah.
Interesting, because I use Notepad on my Windows device regularly, but I automatically have Chrome when I open Chrome, because I turn on three apps every morning when I get into work. I turn on Chrome, I turn on my Mail Center, and I turn on Inventor. And Chrome, one of the three apps that it opens is a tab with notes for my Apple Notes open. You use Remember the Milk, right? Or
yeah.
Evernote or one of those.
Remember the Milk for tasks.
For your syncing of your notepads?
No, right now.
Yeah.
I use it as it's a temporary holder. So like right now I'm taking show notes on it.
Yeah.
On what it is that we're talking about. If I'm like in a meeting with somebody and they're saying, okay, we need you to do this, I have notepad open and I'm taking notes, writing stuff down. Just bits of information that I don't want to memorize. If I'm like on the phone with someone in a, like a call center type of thing and they're like, you know, do this, do that. I've got that written down. It's rare that I actually save anything from Notepad. I mean, it's temporary. I'm using it for this time being. And then if it is a more long-term thing, I'm moving it over either to Simple Note for like a note storage or to the to-do list to do something.
Interesting. Because that's exactly how I use notes, just temporary notes. But I just have a huge long list of completely unrelated. There is no logic to it at all. It's just hundreds and hundreds of simple notes. And once it gets to the point where I can't see it all in one page, I just start a new note.
Oh, well, you could do that. Yeah, no, I usually only have one open. And so, like, after this, I'll do the podcast, and then I'll delete the text, whatever it's called.
So the text page. This is completely off topic. How did we get here? I didn't want to talk about notes, James. I want to talk about Excel.
Sorry.
You even brought it up. You gave me my segue, and I refused to take it.
Because I said something else more interesting, unexpected.
So I was reading.
Isn't it amazing how important those mundane things are?
Anyways. The weird part is what was the funniest? One of the funniest XKCDs I've ever seen was how like people come up with the weirdest workflows, and companies will change something in their thing, thinking that they're not doing anything big, only to completely break somebody's workflow. And then you'll hear about it like crazy. And the example he gives is a company where they're like, yeah, so this one function that we were that we were using, there was a bug that was causing your GPU to run up and overheat, so we fixed that bug so it won't do it. And somebody says, oh, that completely breaks my workflow. No, I can't do it. Like, what? what was your workflow? But that's besides the point. So the idea this article was talking about the end of spreadsheets.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I know. So, well, it's kind of an interesting idea because it basically is saying that spreadsheets are really cool for certain types of tasks that companies go on to take to their just complete absurdity. And I think you all understand where this is coming from because talking with you about your job, I think you've experienced this. But basically, a company will start out making tons of information are held in Excel spreadsheet in companies all the world. Just huge amounts of information. And by nature of Excel spreadsheets, they're kind of like, they're not really good at a central store of data. You might store it on a shared server, but only one person can work on it at a time, and that data is not really backed up anywhere else, or it's not accessible to different platforms. It's kind of in its one format. So it's not a great way of storing data, but that's how most people do it. And what gets even worse is that a lot of times these spreadsheets will start out as like a simple prototype. People just throw data into the spreadsheet, and then it's pretty useful as a tool, so they'll keep adding data and adding functions and adding pages until you get these massive spreadsheets that are tens of thousands of data entries long. They've got pages of different stuff for doing different functions, and they're so overextended that it's just become absurd that they're not really.
The analogy that we use in my team is we think of Excel as a workbench.
Okay.
And it's great for, like you just said, prototyping something, doing something on the fly, you've got your set of tools around. It's not a database, but you can, you know, you could throw some data in there, do your thing, and create it really quickly. Versus something else that's more like an assembly line, which is designed to do the same thing over and over. You can refresh it by just, you change the input and it's going to chunk through it just like it would everything else. And it can be significantly more complicated as well, because assembly lines, you can add machinery, you can tag things into it, you can have different steps. And so it's a weird transition that we're going through right now, because we were 100% Excel, and now we've actually introduced R into the mix.
Ooh.
Which is more of, it's a programming language for stats, and it's a calculator. It's kind of cool. But we think of that as an assembly line, where what we talk about is that there's a high fixed cost up front for something like R, because you have to program it and you have to debug it. And it's, you're literally looking at lines of code, looking at the input, looking at the code, then looking at the output. But once it's created, it's really efficient to run over and over. Anybody can do it. You're literally pressing a button, that kind of thing. Whereas Excel has a very low initial cost, but then it doesn't, like, whenever you update it, that cost gets rebirth every time.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't have a low marginal cost for maintenance. And that's where things can get a little complicated very quickly. One of the nice parts about Excel, though, is for the most part, Microsoft has done a great job of getting it on every single computer, so I can email it to anybody and they can use it. Whereas with R, it's like, oh, you wanted to run that? Here, go to this website, download this, make sure you got the latest packages, do X, Y, Z. Okay, half an hour later, you can now run it. High fixed cost up front.
Right. But, yeah, it's interesting. It's cool. It's I'm reading about R right now. I was gonna. It's based on Fortran and C. It's cool. Yeah. So that's actually. So this this article, I think this will you'll understand what this is saying. Research from Account Agility, which is a ridiculous name,
shows
that 72% of CFOs consider their firms to be too reliant on spreadsheets. The larger the company, the more spreadsheets are deployed, and the greater issue and headaches that occur. While Excel is clearly a central tool in many offices, businesses must also consider finance-friendly alternatives that address these risks, whilst also respecting the need for control. There's no denying how beneficial spreadsheets have been in the business world, with many financial departments relying on them for reporting and data analysis. However, errors in spreadsheet, blah, blah, blah. Spreadsheets are at their best when they're either a tactical tool or as a prototype for a more formal process design. The flexibility of Excel allows users to create a template very easily, but there's a danger that occurs. There's a danger that problems will occur if the problem is relied on too heavily. So that's the big question, is how do you, like,
but there's problems with other things like R. Like I said, the biggest problem that we've had is when you're developing it and you have an error, it's incredibly difficult to find. Like, oh, I had an extra period here. That's why.
Yeah, you actually got to get good at programming, which is...
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a very different skill set.
Right. Yeah, and oftentimes with your more obscure programming languages where they don't have they don't have a company like Apple behind it, where Apple and Swift it's awesome because the developer environment is fantastic and free, specifically built for that language. Whereas with Rust, I'm assuming there's not like a free grade IDE. Available, somebody's going to want to get paid for a really good one, and you know that would pick up the periods where they're supposed to be. So I don't know. I hear what you're saying, but it's, I think as we get, I think as we're starting to move into this. I don't want to say this. I feel like the automation of automation. So Excel is a automation tool. It's a tool that automates certain types of processes. It makes things a lot better. But moving it to the next stage is something that not a lot of people are going to be great at. And the question is, how do you do that? How do you get to the next stage? And
Well, that and like Microsoft has figured it out too. Like they know this,
right?
And they're working on solutions to make Excel more comfortable for things like this. And you can see it in their in what it is that they're doing. It's yeah, I'm sure they're destroying workflows left and right, but I like the improvements that they're making.
Right,
they're making it easier. I mean, they're not gonna. It's never gonna be a database. They get that, but they're making it so it can natively connect to databases pretty easily now.
Right.
So, and Oracle's helping out dramatically with things like that. You could tell those two companies talk.
Yeah. Exactly. Interesting. Cool. Just a thought.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's funny actually. I was talking with. I was carpooling with a coworker, and we were talking about it. And I told him, I was like, man, it's this weird thing on our team now where I don't think I would get hired today because I don't know how to do R. And I think that's now a requirement for this team. And honestly, we now have the fear of, are we overly dependent on R? And it's just specialized enough where it's like, man, if one of you go on vacation, like, don't ask me to update it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Whereas, but we kind of, like with Excel, I could walk you through one of the spreadsheets and say, look, okay, if someone needs an update, you input the data here. And part of it is I'm good at designing them. Well, I can say anywhere where there's a gray cell, that's an input. See this big section over here that has a block of numbers? That's the input. Just make sure it's in this format and everything will be okay. Now, if I were saying to you, oh, we added a new product, you have to add that to the spreadsheet. Oh, I'm sorry. that's a pain for me. I don't even like to do it. And I created the thing. And so, like, I get that.
So, you know what time it is, James?
What time is it?
It's time for your weekly VR update.
Yes.
So this is when it starts to get really exciting. Up to this point, I've been talking about the tech and the different products and kind of going out there and just been very excited about it in general. But now everybody's kind of familiar with the different players in the race, and the race has started. So Engadget was reporting this week a UBM Game Network industry report, which I don't really know what that is, but it's a game industry game network. They go and they do a bunch of they talk to developers and get a bunch of feedback about different stuff. They were showing that 49% of VR developers are targeting the Vive presently, while 43% are writing software for the Oculus Rift.
So virtual tie.
Virtual tie, exactly. But this is what's interesting, and the gap gets wider when it comes to the next game from these studios. Nearly 35% are building for the Vive, while a little over 23% are aiming at the Rift. So there is a growing divide between the two platforms of who's going to be building for what. Yeah. Now, so presently,
does
neither
make
company
you upset that Sony's not on that list.
I think they're doing the same thing. Yeah, exactly. It's still they'll be fine. So this is kind of interesting.
The study doesn't explain why the Vive is getting more support. I think we know, given your experiences.
I can just say this is what drives me nuts. Is to me, it just seems so obvious that it's like the visual quality of the Oculus is slightly better than the HTC Vive, but it's only slight, and the overall feel of the headset's a little bit lighter, but it's once you're in it, I didn't really notice a difference. But where I noticed a huge difference was sound quality of the headphones, the motion controllers, the peripherals, the things
around.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The things that don't have anything to do with the direct VR experience. The VR experience is HTC's 98% of the way to where Oculus is at, and neither one of them are 100% of the way where they want to be. So
yeah, I was going to say, in a couple of years, they'll both be laughing at the quality of it.
Right, and so where HTC just dominates the Vive is in the motion controls and walking around and the different types of experience. You know, and honestly, if all you're going to be doing is sitting down, like right now, the best experience for messing around with the Oculus is, as they describe it, it's a sit-down experience. So you sit down with an Xbox controller in your hand and you play video games while you're sitting down. Like you said, or you could develop, if you wanted to build that game, you could build that game for the PlayStation, which already has a huge user base of people who have the computers that are, you know, have the console ready to go, and all they need to do is buy the PlayStation VR headset, which is a lot cheaper than the Vive. I don't know. I'm not shocked by this at all. But it's kind of fun to see that it's like we're getting.
You're starting to make me want to get one. I'll be honest. Yeah. You just keep hitting me over the head with it every week.
I know. So this week I decided. I was actually reading this article, and all of a sudden I realized, I was like, you know, I'm gonna get my PlayStation VR thing in October. How long is that from now? And I actually looked into it. It's a month and a half. Like, I'd get one in a month and a half. And we were talking about
doing one. Like, this is happening.
I've already pre-ordered my PlayStation VR, man.
There you go. Yes, it's definitely happening.
I've put money down and stuff. It's funny. I haven't completely paid for it, and I could still get my money back. And I was kind of thinking, I had the thought, I was like, you know, I got some expenses coming up and stuff, like, and, you know, I just spent a lot of money on this last trip. Like, is it really worth the $400, like, buying a piece of hardware that's going to require me to buy more software to even use it? Like, do I really want to do this? Is this really a good decision? Like, maybe I should be more responsible with my life.
No.
And then I thought about it, and I was like, it's the entire reason I bought the PlayStation. Like, years and years and years ago. And I know that's not necessarily a justification to spend more money on it, but, like, that was the point. Like, it was to get to the VR, the PlayStation VR. This is what I wanted. Like, I just, if there was ever a time to justify spending money on a stupid toy, I feel like this is it. So, yes, I'm doubling down. Very excited. Very excited. I already know which launch game I'm going to get. Battlezone VR. I'm so excited for that game. Oh my gosh. It's so much fun playing it.
Nice.
Cool. So, it's going to be awesome. I'm really excited, James.
Nice. I have no transition. Aptoponymy. Let's see here. APTONOMY. Aptonomy. Maybe that's it. Aptonomy Inc. has developed a drone technology that can make prison breaks, robberies, or malicious intrusions of any kind impossible for mere mortals. Essentially, they've created a drone where they took the DJI drone that, you know, normally does like cameras. And turn it into a kind of like a flying security guard. It's kind of awesome. So it has day and night vision cameras. It has bright lights. It has a loudspeaker and a microphone so you can communicate back and forth. And what's the other thing? So it has some like facial recognition technology. You can look at real live video of something. If you're a user of it. The other really cool thing about it is, how do I describe it? So you can have like motion detectors out somewhere, and if it detects motion, the drone will go from its little sitting pad over to where it is to check out what's going on for you. You can also set them on regular patrols, and when their battery gets low, they're smart enough to go back to charge their battery. And sounds awesome.
This does sound really cool.
Awesome.
So
they've got like, they're part of the, so Y Combinator launched their thing. There's like 80 something companies, so we'll hear more about them later. But this was kind of the coolest of all of them. And what was it? Oh, so they can record, obviously. Maybe not obvious, but you know, they can record the video and the interaction. There's an energy company, there we go, that's pre-ordered a ton of them for their oil refineries. Because they're always in remote locations, it's hard for our security guards to patrol, and they always seem to be a target for attacks. And so, like, these things will be awesome. for that. So we have to get a big corporate headquarters for our podcast so that we can have security drones protecting us.
I completely agree with that. I'm down. That's what finally got us, James. We decided that was when we knew we wanted to do it. That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah, what I like for it is they're taking the DJI and modifying it to do a very specific task. And I think we're going to see a whole lot more of this. I know for the idea that I'm working on, saying, okay, how could we get drones to help do things on the roof for buildings? And this gives me hope.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You could do it. Now, granted, the two founders, one of them has a doctorate in robotics from the Institute of Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah,
and the other one previously worked at NASA's JPL, Lockheed Martin and Intel. So, I mean, you know, there's that. But whatever. I don't have
Yeah, that's funny. I whenever I see these different startups, I feel the same like sense of you see the different founders and everything, and you're just like, oh, they're really smart. Dang it, I'm not like that.
Great notifications for my washing machine. Exactly. These guys are creating flying security guard drones. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's okay. It's okay. I don't have to be the smartest. I just have to hire them.
There we go. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Fire. Drones are going to be a thing, though. They really are. I can feel it.
Well, eventually, they're going to combine the virtual reality with the drones.
Mm.
That's going to be awesome. They probably already have, right? Wasn't that the drone racing thing?
Yeah, well, the first-person view droning is a big thing, but it's like it's still fixed view. You just get the one view of your camera. To me, it'll really cross some sort of an amazing threshold when you get the 360 camera view around the drone.
That sounds semi-nauseating, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
I feel like, yes, for true racers who figure it out, who are going to be looking around trying to figure out where their competition's at, and I don't know. I guess if it's not going that fast, it's not a big deal. I currently handle it in my car pretty well.
Exactly. That's what I always come back to. We literally spent our entire lives like this. It's just I don't know. Yeah. I guess
those are going at a very different... I don't know. I imagine drone races happen at like 200 miles an hour, I guess. and that's where I'm like, oh, how could you handle all the inputs and the bright colors? The
speed.
What is it? It's Red Racer or like that one racing movie? Speed Racer?
There we go. Speed Racer, yeah.
Like, that's what I'm imagining.
And I'm like,
I couldn't handle that.
That's like, funny.
Nah, it probably won't be that. It's probably much more boring.
Other than exactly.
That'll probably be real.
that's really funny. Speaking of drones, there's one company who's into a different type of drone, James. Self-driving drones. Uber, this doesn't actually have anything to do with drones. It has to do with how they spend money. They're still losing a ton of money. Just buckets of change. It's kind of amazing. So, like, startups always lose money. That's part of the whole deal. Is you come up with a good idea, you start to get traction, but the fear is that somebody else can come along and beat you to the punch. So you just you get a bunch of money from your venture capitalists, from your angels, whatever, and then you spend that money like crazy while you build out your infrastructure to increase the size so that you can. So that when Apple or Google or Facebook notices what you're doing, they have a choice. They can either buy you or compete from behind against you, which they're not used to doing. So you get this advantage. So Uber, that for a while, and they're getting pretty good at spending money at this point. Today, Uber held a conference call with investors and revealed that it's losing a ton of money so far this year. According to a report from Bloomberg, Uber has lost $1.27 billion in just the first half of 2016. Yeah. So, and this is far from an isolated incident. The company is infamous for losing a lot of cash throughout its existence. In 2015, Uber lost more than $2 billion total and has lost over $4 billion in 7-year history. And then this is the important line. Of course, it's not uncommon for startups to bleed cash while they get their footing and figure out how to make a profit. Investors expect it. But the amount of money Uber has been losing and the fact that the losses keep growing has little precedence. So, yeah. So that's the weird question. So Uber obviously is a bit of a different case. They're an enormous multinational corporation with incredible reach and influence already. Yet, so the fact that their finances are don't have much precedent it shouldn't necessarily be shocking. At the same time, it's a pretty shocking amount of money that they're just burning through. You know, one question that I didn't ask, and actually I'm frustrated that I just realized this, because you know, honestly, if they were doing $100 billion worth of business, losing 1.27 wouldn't be that big of a deal. I mean, it would be a big deal, but it's like it's a different problem than if they're only doing, you know, if they're only doing $10 billion worth of business and they're losing, you know, in a year, and they've already lost 1.25. That's a completely different problem than, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I obviously have concerns, because like you said, it's a ton of money and it seems to be growing with them. I get the strategy of be super competitive until you're a monopoly and then raise your prices. We'll see how that goes, because I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. And it's so easy to start up a ride-sharing app that, like, the second they raise their prices, someone else is going to come in and beat them again.
Right.
Which just makes you wonder, how sustainable is it really? This could be interesting. Do you know how much money they have? Like, cash hoard?
I'm trying to look.
Yeah. Because that would be...
They have a paper valuation of $50 billion.
Great. But...
it doesn't really mean...
Uber... balance sheet. Let's see. Or something. Uber's profit and loss. Well, I guess this is the original Business Insider's. Let's see here. Suggest the, would you say $50 billion company, talks about their gains, their losses. They generated a ton of money, but they lost a lot. I wonder what's the revenue holds Uber could generate 1.5 to 2 billion of net revenue this year. There's no, okay. So their revenue, see, this is the other interesting part, right? Their revenue is somewhere between 1.5 to 2 billion. So their losses, it's not like, oh yeah, they lost 1 billion out of 10 billion.
Yeah, exactly. That's what my point was. They lost nearly as much money as they made.
But what, how much cash do they have? Because if they've got like 10 billion in the bank, whatever. You can go a lot of years with $10 billion.
Their operating cost was only one and a half. What was the number you just said?
Uber has lost so much money.
Quiet.
What is, let's see, if you go to, I think it's crunchbase.com, right? Isn't that the website that has values for, I love that we're doing research in real time here.
I know.
So if you go to Crunchbase, type in Uber company, mobile car app, great, or Uber Eats, Uber Pool, Uber Rush, click. Why is this website so slow?
It's you, not me. Total equity funding, $8.71 billion in 12 rounds from 69 investors.
Yeah, I see.
Headquarters in San Francisco.
Not concerned.
Yeah.
Yet. I just said that Travis Kalanick is not the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, I've heard he's a total slimeball, but he's a lovable slimeball.
Yeah, so they've got enough cash. They shouldn't be worried yet, but it's interesting that they're getting out with their investors and telling them now, like, hey, P.S., we lost some money. We'll see. We'll see. I would not be shocked at all to find out that they burn out, or that they run out of gas, and that another company comes in after the fact and does it better.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it's not crazy, the idea that Ford and Lyft have teamed up, and they think they've got a chance to beat Uber in the long run. Ford saying, look, we can build an automated car, and Lyft already has the infrastructure for dealing with pickups and drop-offs and that whole app infrastructure. Put those two things together and do it at a rate that actually makes money, and investors could just abandon ship in amazing style from Uber, you know?
Yeah, I bet you, too, that if Lyft can figure out how to just have better customer service for the drivers, that would make a big difference. I have to say, other complaint I've heard about Uber, this is kind of a black box on the customer service side, but I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. So how much more time do you have? You've got more of a...
I know, unfortunately, none.
All right.
None. So there you go. Cool.
That's all right.
Cool.
After all the important ones, the rest is just a mystery. Okay.
Don't worry about it. But thank you for joining us for what you did here. And thank you so much for listening to episode 257. We really do appreciate it. And you can check out all those show notes with the links. Again, it's furloughbros.com/257. And if you don't want to go to the website each time, which I don't blame you, who wants to really... you can have it delivered right to you. And so if you also go to furloughbros.com, you can sign up and we'll send it to you. Don't worry about it. Gratis. And also, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. So if you'd like to contribute, we have 4 different levels. You can be a fanboy, a nerd, a junkie, and a maven. And they each have their own different levels of rewards. Again, just furloughbros.com to learn more about that. That's what we got. It's awesome. I am James Furlough, and my early bird brother is Matthew Furlough, and so we will talk next time.